All right, so we are reading from the Nectar of Devotion, a summary study of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is chapter 16, Spontaneous Devotion Further Described, and we are reading from the third subheading of this chapter, which is conjugal love. Although it's Prabhupada's books are generally quite simple, but because Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is quite a technical book, so Prabhupada has used many terms in English here which may not be readily understandable. So conjugal, It literally means within married life, although Prabhupada uses it to mean between man and woman, because he speaks of the conjugal love of Krishna and the gopis, for instance. So, Srila Prabhupada writes, devotional service following in the footsteps of the gopis of Vrindavan or the queens at Dwarka is called devotional service in conjugal love. This devotional service in conjugal love can be divided into two categories. One is indirect conjugal love, the other direct. In both of these categories, one has to follow the particular gopi who is engaged in such service in Golok Vrindavan. Ustupatyam. To be directly attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in conjugal love is technically called keli. This keli performance means to directly join with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are other devotees who do not wish direct contact with the Supreme Person, but who relish the conjugal love affairs of the Lord with the gopis. Such devotees enjoy simply by hearing of the activities of the Lord with the gopis. This development of conjugal love can be possible only with those who are already engaged in following the regulative principles of devotional service, specifically in the worship of Radha and Krishna in the temple. Such devotees gradually develop a spontaneous love for the deity, and by hearing of the Lord's exchange of loving affairs with the gopis, they gradually become attracted to these pastimes. After this spontaneous attraction becomes highly developed, the devotee is placed in either of the above-mentioned categories. This development of conjugal love for Krishna is not manifested in women only. The material body has nothing to do with spiritual loving affairs. A woman may develop an attitude for becoming a friend of Krishna, and similarly, a man may develop the feature of becoming a gopi in Vrindavan. How a devotee in the form of a man can desire to become a gopi is stated in the Padma Purana as follows. In days gone by, there were many sages in Dandakaranya. Dandakaranya is the name of the forest where Lord Ramachandra lived after being banished by his father for 14 years. At that time, there were many advanced sages who were captivated by the beauty of Lord Ramachandra and who desired to become women in order to embrace the Lord. Later on, these sages appeared in Golok Vrindavan when Krishna advented himself there, and they were born as gopis, or girlfriends of Krishna. In this way, they attained the perfection of spiritual life. And although it's not stated here, among the gopis of Vrindavan, there were, apart from these, the rishis of Dandakaranya who became gopis, there were also the Shrutichari's, that means the various Vedas, personified Vedas. They also became gopis. And then there were the Yajna Sitas, that means Lord Ramachandra. After Sita was sent to the forest, the king, he had to perform yajnas, so he was performing yajnas with a golden form of Sita, because the wife should be there. So every time he had a yajna, he made a different golden form. It was non-different from Sita, and they all became gopis also. So the gopis were coming from different backgrounds. The story of the sages of Dandakaranya can be explained as follows. When Lord Ramachandra was residing in Dandakaranya, the sages who were engaged in devotional service there became attracted by his beauty and immediately thought of the gopis at Vrindavan, who enjoyed conjugal loving affection with Krishna. In this instance, it is clear that the sages of Dandakaranya desired conjugal love in the manner of the gopis, although they were well aware of the Supreme Lord as both Krishna and Lord Ramachandra. They knew that although Ramachandra was an ideal king and could not accept more than one wife, Lord Krishna, being the full-fledged personality of Godhead, could fulfill the desires of all of them in Vrindavan. These sages also concluded that the form of Lord Krishna is more attractive than that of Lord Ramachandra. And so they prayed to become gopis in their future lives to be associated with Krishna. Lord Ramachandra remained silent, and his silence shows that he accepted the prayers of the sages. Monam sammati lakshanam, I suppose. Thus they were blessed by Lord Ramachandra to have association with Lord Krishna in their future lives. As a result of this benediction, they all took birth as women in the wombs of gopis at Gokul, and as they had desired in their previous lives, they enjoyed the company of Lord Krishna, who was present at that time in Gokul Vrindavan. The perfection of their human form of life was thus achieved by their generating a transcendental sentiment to share conjugal love with Lord Krishna. Conjugal love is divided into two classifications, namely conjugal love as husband and wife, and conjugal love as lover and beloved. One who develops conjugal love for Krishna as a wife is promoted to Dwaraka, where the devotee becomes the queen of the Lord. One who develops conjugal love for Krishna as a lover is promoted to Golok Vrindavan to associate with the gopis and enjoy loving affairs with Krishna there. We should note carefully, however, that this conjugal love for Krishna, either as a gopi or as a queen, is not limited only to women. Even men can develop such sentiments, as was evidenced by the sages of Dandakaranya. If someone simply desires conjugal love but does not follow in the footsteps of the gopis, he is promoted in association to association with the Lord at Dwaraka. In the Mahakurma Purana, it is stated, great sages who were the sons of fire gods rigidly followed the regulated principles in their desire to have conjugal love for Krishna. As such, in their next lives, they were able to associate with the Lord, the origin of all creation, who is known as Vasudev or Krishna, and all of them got him as their husband. So these are very wonderful topics. It's certainly on a level far beyond discussion of anything of this material world. What to speak of being far beyond topics of discussion of this material world, it's far beyond even discussion of becoming liberated from this material world, moksha, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has stated in his beautiful poetic language that swarasiki siddhi braja gopi gan paramachamchala shati jogira dhyan nirvishesha gyan ekani na paistiti. He says that the natural attraction of the gopis for Krishna is their wealth. And they are, at the same time, the gopis, they are paramachanchala. Now this is an interesting term, because chanchala means Lakshmi. But they are paramachanchala, they are the supreme Lakshmis. And chanchala also means that she doesn't stay very long in one place. Except there's one place she stays. Where is that? On the chest of Lord Vishnu. So the gopis, by their nature, so paramachanchala means they're also unpredictable. Sometimes they'll even reject Krishna superficially. but at the same time they're sati, they're the most chaste, because they're fully dedicated to Krishna. Even their apparent rejection of Krishna is only to increase their loving feelings and loving affairs. Ah, could we close that off, please? Too cold is not too good for me. I already have Tarajukamhe Mujhe. So then, Paramachanchala Sati. Now, the next thing Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is Jogira Dhyan, the meditation of the yogis, and Nirvishesha Gyan, the knowledge of impersonal, non-differentiation, Ekane Napai Stiti, it has no place here. So this talk of the love of Krishna, of the gopis, or even of the queens of Dwarka, their love for Krishna, is not only far above this material world, but it's far above even that the yogis' meditation and the impersonal knowledge that is considered highly by the the persons who consider themselves followers of the Upanishads. Of course, there are also Upanishads like Gopal Tapani, which is directly Krishna conscious, but others such as Shvetashvatara Upanishad is also very much personal, although it doesn't directly name the Lord, but there are others, Chandogya, in which appears Tattvamasi, and the impersonalists, they're very fond of quoting this to try to equate themselves with Bhagavan, which is a misinterpretation of Tattvamasi, or the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Neti Neti, and the impersonalists, they like this kind of thing. But the gopis' love for Krishna is far beyond this. So these are highly exalted topics. Srila Prabhupada has given, Rupa Goswami has given. Srila Prabhupada, as the follower of Rupa Goswami, has given these topics. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Soyang Rupa Kadama Hyam Dadati Supadantikam. We pray to Rupa Goswami Prabhupada that he has revealed the inner heart's desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that inner heart's desire that is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam Naomi Krishna Swarupam. He is Krishna, but with the color and the bodily luster and the feelings of Radharani. So it's a very secret, Channa avatar, secret avatar, in which Krishna is searching for himself. Krishna has taken the mood of Radha, and in separation, he's searching for Krishna, just like we were singing just now. Hey Radhe Rajadevi Keja Lalite Hey Nanda Suna Kutaha. The six Goswamis, in the mood of gopis, were calling out, where are Radha and Krishna? So this viraha bhav, or this searching of Radha for Krishna, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's heart's desire. This was revealed by Rupa Goswami, who is the author of this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's manobhishta, or his inner heart's desire, is also, there's the inner, his own personal desire, and his external, that means for the benefit of all others also, that his heart's desire is also prithivite ache jato nagaradi gram savatra pracha hoibe morana, that his name will be preached in every town and village of the world. So, Srila Prabhupada has, let's get back to Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami, sitting in Vrindavan, is writing these books. Not only Rupa, but Rupa Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jeev Gopal Bhatta Das Raghunath. They were all writing And Srila Prabhupada translated the most important Vaishnava books, Hare Krishna. And in this way, he demonstrated or brought to the world the Rupa Anuga Parampara, the line of devotees following Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. So those books were written on some palm leaves in Vrindavan, and some copies were here and there, and a few people, highly elevated souls, were reading and appreciating those books. Srila Prabhupada made them available to everybody all over the world. Otherwise, this was only discussed by a few elevated souls. But Prabhupada created so many elevated souls by distributing the mercy of Rupa Goswami Prabhupada in the form of these books. And, of course, there are many other books by the Goswamis which have gradually been, I think they're mostly, whatever books we know of, they're mostly been translated now. And devotees who have the time and the inclination, they may read those books. And books also, not only by the six Goswamis, so many other, the Vaishnava literatures, so many books are there. Srila Prabhupada said that if we were to start now and just read all day, every day, the Vaishnava literatures till the end of our lives, we wouldn't reach the end. There's no end. But then again, there may not be any need to, because as Srila Prabhupada said, these four books, Chaitanya Charitam, well, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the Nectar of Devotion, these books are sufficient for preaching purposes. Even that, it's quite a big endeavor to read so many books, it seems. Who's read all of Prabhupada's books? Anyone here? All Srimad Bhagavatam? Yourself? No, actually reading Gita Press Bhagavatam, it won't help much actually, because we won't understand without the purports of the acharyas. In fact, we're almost certain to misunderstand. Just like if we read about Mohini Murti, how are we going to understand unless the acharyas explain? Someone asked me about this Mohini Murti, how is that? And it seems to be showing that Lord Shiva is not very great, but I explained that. No, it shows the greatness of Lord Shiva. It doesn't show that he's not great, it shows his greatness. Because he can only be bewildered by Vishnu. So that's his greatness. So all these things have to be understood through the acharyas. This Nectar of Devotion is a very important book. Srila Prabhupada, I mean, that's an understatement. And very important means unlimitedly important. Srila Prabhupada writes about this. Is very nice. The nectar of devotion will teach us how to turn the one switch that will immediately brighten everything everywhere. Just turn one switch. Now we're all in darkness. One switch, and then everything bright. What is that? Switch to Krishna. Bring Krishna into our lives. One who does not know this method is missing the point of life. The nectar of devotion is not presented to condemn any way of materialistic life, but the attempt is to give information to religionists, philosophers, and people in general how to love Krishna. These are a few quotes I'm giving from the preface. The nectar of devotion is specifically presented for persons who are now engaged in the Krishna consciousness movement. The nectar of devotion teaches us how to stimulate our original love for Krishna and how to be situated in that position where we can enjoy our blissful life. So Prabhupada, I'm trying to find, he says it's the handbook for devotees engaged in Krishna consciousness. Where's that quote? I'm just trying to find it. Anyway. Yeah, so I remember seeing this book when I joined the movement, I saw this book. And the title itself is so appealing. These two words, nectar and devotion. The nectar is not a word that's commonly used. When we're talking with people in general, we don't hear the word nectar much, do we? And we don't hear the word devotion much either. When we're among devotees, we hear these words. Actually, in the early days of ISKCON, this word nectar, we used to hear this word a lot. Oh, nectar. There was one devotee would read, because we were all reading the books for the first time, and we'd read something, oh, this is wonderful. And we'd go to another devotee and say, hey, Prabhu, listen to this. This is nectar. So it was a very common word among devotees, not so much nowadays. Then that kirtan was nectar. Oh, this prasadam is nectar. So like this. That class was nectar. Or nectarian, we'd say. And devotion, it's also not a word that we hear very often. But these two words in themselves, they're very attractive, aren't they? Nectar sounds very attractive. And devotion sounds very attractive also. So this, of course, is a translation from the original Sanskrit, bhakti rasamrita sindhu, which means the ocean of the nectar of devotion. Bhakti is translated as devotion. It specifically means devotion to Krishna. So I saw the book and the title, The Nectar of Devotion. Oh, wow, what an amazing title for a book. What's inside that book? Must be something really wonderful. And actually it is. Not something really wonderful, but everything really wonderful from beginning to end. It's simply nectar. And the first edition of the book, the cover was also, at least to me, it was just extremely attractive. Nowadays the cover, it's more kind of sophisticated. But in those days, the artwork of our books was, it might have appeared a little crude, but it would, to me it appeared like just incredibly attractive. It was like a bright pink background, like gaudy pink. It was like, just extremely bright pink. And with in a circle, there was a picture of Radha and Krishna, painted in a, like I say, a simple, almost crude way, but very devotional. So, and then on the back cover, there's a picture of Prabhupada. This is amazing. Nowadays, we're used to it. We're so used to seeing amazing things that we're not amazed anymore. But we shouldn't stop being amazed, because that's what rasa is. Rasa means, what is that definition? Yas chamatkara bhara bhu. Rasa means that which creates a deep sense of chamatkar, amazement. So that's what bhakti rasamrita sindhu. I was saying it's the ocean of the nectar of devotion. Actually, bhakti ras. the ocean of the nectar of the mellows of devotion. Ras is a very difficult word to translate. Taste, mellow. But especially as it is concerned with rasa can also be applied to taste, physical taste. But when it's applied to when it's applied to emotions and the taste that is produced from various emotional interactions, well, maybe that's a definition of rasa, the taste or the feeling that's produced from various emotions that arise from interactions. So it's not very easy to define in English. But it's what life is all about. On this platform in the material world, there's the jararas. There's also shanta, dasya, sakya, vatsalya, and shringaras on this material plane. But that means neutral, servitude, neutrality, servitude, friendship, parental affection, parenthood, and conjugal love, as Srila Prabhupada calls it. So that's also here on the mundane plane, but that always ends in misery. In fact, it's misery from beginning to end. Yehi sanspasha ja bhoga dukhayonya evate adyantavanta kontaya nateshu ramate buddhaha. Everything in this material existence, the happiness which is derived from sense contact, beginning, middle, and end, is simply a cause of distress. Therefore, an intelligent person does not take part in it. An intelligent person takes part in the bhakti ras. What are the feelings generated from interaction between Krishna and his devotees, and between Krishna's devotees among themselves, which means everything they do is centered on Krishna. So this is a scientific presentation. It's concerned with emotions and emotionalism, but it's not simply some mundane sentiment, but it's very scientifically analyzed. And this is one of the special contributions, maybe the foremost contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, that they've analyzed what is bhakti, what are the feelings and the emotions and the taste generated from that. Now, other Vaishnava sampradayas, they also speak of bhakti. But this understanding of bhakti, up to the stage of being a lover of Krishna, this is the contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Going beyond simply honoring Bhagavan and coming to the point where one can dishonor him out of love. This is almost unimaginable. But it is understandable by giving the example of the perverted reflection. In this material, in this mundane sphere, we see also that the highly respected person who no one would think of insulting in public, his wife in private, not in public, but in private, they'll have some bantering among themselves. Srila Prabhupada, I've told this story many times, I've heard Srila Prabhupada say this, and it's It very nicely demonstrates the point. Prabhupada told a story about Gladstone, who was a prime minister of Britain at the time when Britain was ruling the world. Rule Britannia, Britannia rules the waves, and all this kind of thing. So he was the most powerful man in the world. Something like George Bush today, but more so, because America doesn't directly have an empire. Although they used to have pictures of the British Empire, like the map of the world, and the British Empire would be in pink, and it was like, you know, half the world was pink. And even places that were not directly ruled by Britain, they were like indirectly ruled, like this part of the world. And even today, the British influence is strong here in this area. So Gladstone was the Prime Minister of the British Empire. Prabhupada told this story. Extremely powerful person. So one man had an appointment to see him. So he was waiting outside his office at the stipulated time. And he waited. He was told, you just wait till you're called. So he waited, and he waited, and he waited, and he waited. And he thought, wow, you know, Mr. Gladstone must be very busy. You know, he's got the whole empire. Well, you know, what's he doing? He's sending more troops to a troubled area, or he's arranging to take over a different part of the world, or he's adjusting the budget, or he's making some new... Maybe he's speaking with his ministers. He must be doing something extremely important because I've got an appointment. I have some important work, but he's not calling me. So he must be doing something very, very important. So eventually that man became so curious that he very gently opened the door of Mr. Gladstone's office and looked inside and saw Mr. Gladstone, the Prime Minister of the British Empire, world famous, most powerful man in the floor, was on his hands and knees in his office, crawling around the floor with his grandson on his back, saying, "Gee up, gee up." That's what you say to a horse. So Mr. Gladstone had become a horse because he was playing with his grandson. So all the business of the British Empire was forgotten, and he was playing with his grandson. And you see, his grandson was telling him, "Go faster, go faster," sitting on his back. Now, even the Queen of England, who was, you know, one of the few people who could tell Gladstone anything, she wouldn't consider doing that. No one could consider telling Mr. Gladstone what to do. Let alone no question of sitting on his back. But his grandson can do it. Why? Because it is a relationship that transcends the Mr. Gladstone being the Prime Minister. And it's simply a relationship. It's based on love and based on intimacy. So it doesn't mean that the grandson of Mr. Gladstone is more important than him. But out of love, he has taken the role of being less important than him and becoming the servant of him. So if this goes on in the material world, and that's actually so enjoyable. I mean, Mr. Gladstone, putting aside all his business, he was just playing with his grandson because it's so much enjoyable. It's not that he's irresponsible. The British Empire will run on. He was not giving it up completely. But he also wants some fun sometimes. And fun means with your loved ones. And with your loved ones, it doesn't matter how big you are, but they always see you as their loved one. Just like previously, Manmohan Singh, Dr. Manmohan Singh, was an economics professor. Now he's the Prime Minister of India. very important position in the world, but to his wife, their relationship didn't change one little bit because he became the prime minister. She's still his husband, her husband. And you know, she can understand he's busy, but still she may say to him, why don't you give, you know, you have to give some time to me too. Well, who are you? You're just a, you know, you're just a housewife. But not just any housewife, she's his wife. And he has to give her time, and she will, you know, I don't know, I'm just saying this as an example. Maybe she has a habit of, you know, ticking him off for not wearing putting on his tie properly or something like, you know, this kind of thing. Something, you know. So, and she'll still nag him for that, even though she doesn't, oh, Prime Minister. She'll say, oh, you're late for breakfast again. And why don't you come on time? And she's saying that because she has an intimate relationship. She can scold him. Not she all the time scolds him, I hope. But because it's a relationship of love, she can do that. And that's actually enjoyable. Just like we find between Krishna and Rukmini, that Rukmini was so much the perfect wife that she always acted for Krishna's pleasure and she never talked back to him. She was just like, and Krishna thought, this is a little boring. You know, why doesn't she get angry with me sometimes and then we can have a little fight? And that's more fun than, you know, she's nice, she's a good queen, but, you know, if we quarreled sometimes, then there'd be more fun. So Krishna tried to incite Rukmini. You all know the story, I hope. By talking some crazy things, I mean, it seemed to Rukmini. He was saying to her that even though she had grandchildren at the time, of course she was still very beautiful because she's Rukmini, she's Lakshmi Devi. I mean, she doesn't grow old in looks. Her transcendental form is always beautiful, like that of a young woman. She's eternally young. So Krishna was saying that, well, you know, actually, you made a great mistake in marrying me. You were young and you were, you know, when you're young, you don't have very good judgment, but, you know, I'm just a cowherd boy. I don't have any good lineage and, you know, I'm just a coward. I've run away and living in the middle of the ocean because I'm afraid of everyone and I'm not very well behaved, and even many people are my devotees, but I just neglect them and they live in poverty. And you know, you made a big mistake marrying me. You should have actually married Shishupal, who wanted to marry you. But you know, it's not too late. You can leave me. You can go now, and you can marry Shishupal anyway. And he did this just to make her angry. But instead she just fainted. She thought, Krishna's rejecting me. And she fainted in sorrow. So the point here is that, oh, Krishna, even though there was such an ideal husband-wife relationship, he was thinking it would be more fun if there was some, you know, if there was some quarreling sometimes, like Satyabhama. She's the other way completely. She's always quarreling with Krishna. But Krishna enjoys that. That's called Vama Swabhava, left wing. And Dakshin Swabhava means like Rukmini, just very, very good. And Satyabhama, too much. You know, she's always harassing me and henpecked, but Krishna enjoys that. So if that's if we see even in this world that intimate relationship is a form of pleasure. Of course, it's a perverted relationship. And we can't say that the relationship of a man with his wife in this world is on the same level of Krishna with his wives, because it's a perverted relationship. There's no pure love in this world. And even if we think it's pure, well, it will be broken by time. But the point is that, well, if it's there in this world, then where is it coming from? It must be coming from the original source of everything, who is Krishna. So those who worship the Lord simply with awe and reverence, their love for him is not as pleasing to him as those who worship him without awe and reverence. Just like the relationship of Krishna with his wives, and even more so with the gopis, is more pleasing to him than so many people offering him prayers. You are supreme, you are great. Just like Brahma, after he had made a mistake of... Actually, from his point of view, maybe a mistake, but we're glad he did it, because it made... It's all part of Krishna's Leela, and we can remember that. He stole the cow, the calves and the cowherd boys, and he was praying to Krishna, you are supreme, you are great, you are the origin of everything. And Krishna, in the mood of a cowherd boy, was looking at him and saying, who's this funny guy with four heads? He seems to be quite disturbed, and he keeps on telling me I'm the supreme and this and that, but you know, I'd really just like to go and play with my friends, but anyway, he seems quite disturbed, so I'd better listen to him. But Krishna, being covered by his own yoga maya, was thinking, I'm just a cowherd boy. So, what's this fellow talking about? Yeah, that I'm supreme and this and that. And Krishna, every day he would come home from the forest, and he would enter Vrindavan, and every day all the demigods, Brahma, Shiva, they would all come and pray to Krishna. And the cowherd boys, they thought this was fabulously amusing. That Krishna, he's just our friend, you know. We fight with him, we wrestle with him, we swim together, we roll in the dust together, we chase after the cows together, we wrestle together, you know. And sometimes Krishna beats me in wrestling, and sometimes I have him down, and Krishna has to say, let me go, let me go. So, and there's all these big demigods or whatever they are, these funny people, they're coming and, oh, Krishna, you are supreme. And all the cowherd boys, they imitate. They go up to Krishna and say, oh, Krishna, you are supreme. Well, because they think it's just a big joke. You know, what's this? What are these funny people saying? So Krishna is... He is more pleased with the swarasiki siddhi, the indiscriminate love of the especially of the residents of Vrindavan. And this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's contribution, which is this analysis of rasa is given by Rupa Goswami. And this is ultimate theology. That when God, out of love, forgets that he's God, to relate with him in that way, that is theology beyond theology, because theology means the science of understanding God. And when God himself forgets that he's God, because his love is so great that, and his devotees' love for him is so great that they all forget, or they're not aware, they're not conscious that Krishna is supreme. And they're not, even if they may be conscious, they're not very much interested in that, because just like that example I was giving, Manmohan Singh, he is the Prime Minister and his wife knows he's the Prime Minister, but as far as she's concerned, that's not very important in their relationship. He became the Prime Minister, he might have become a sweeper in the street, but to her, she's his husband. His position is not very important. To everyone else in India, that he's the Prime Minister is the defining factor in understanding him. He is the Prime Minister and he should be related to as such. He should be respected, or the opposition will heckle him, or even part of the left front, even though they're supposed to be in the coalition, they give him a hard time. So, but anyway, they relate either for or against, they relate to him as the Prime Minister. But his wife, she doesn't relate to him as the Prime Minister. She knows he's the Prime Minister, and according to protocol, she may stand next to him and to receive the head of another state. But the fact that he's the Prime Minister in such a big exalted position, it doesn't affect her relationship with him. She's his wife, that's all. So like that, Krishna, he enjoys the residence of Vrindavan in their love for him, which is not, it's got nothing to do with the fact that he's the supreme, Tamishvaranam Paramam Maheshvaram, nothing to do with that. They simply love him because he's lovable. Or if they love him because he's our son, he's our lover, he's the most beautiful boy in Vrindavan, so naturally we love him. There's no big philosophizing by the residents of Vrindavan. They don't have to sit and think, oh yes, I should worship Krishna, because if I don't, I'll go to hell, and if I do, I'll get delivered from material existence. And he's supreme. Yes, it's our duty to bow down. There's no such thought. Simply they run to Krishna. They simply want to be with Krishna. They're not. But the same residents of Vrindavan, they come as devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they write books like The Nectar of Devotion. And they, in this way, present the highest understanding of the Absolute Truth to us. And Srila Prabhupada has very mercifully given us these very, what words are there to describe, most sweet, most relishable books. So please read them. Srila Prabhupada said, I have only one complaint against my disciples, that they don't read my books. And actually we did read. But Prabhupada thought we didn't read enough. We used to. It was because Prabhupada wrote in several of his letters that all my disciples should read my books at least 1 or 2 hours every day. And we took that very seriously. And we would read a lot. And otherwise, how can we know about Krishna? Maybe it's because you're from a Hindu background and you think, well, we already know. So what do we need to read for? But you do need to read to understand who is Krishna. Not, Gita Press Krishna or TV program Mahabharat Krishna, but Rupa Goswami's Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Krishna, Prabhupada's Krishna. If you don't read Prabhupada's books, you're going to end up with, still in our mind, we understand Krishna as the Amar Chitrakata Krishna. So that Krishna is not Krishna. That Krishna that's not Radharani's Krishna. That's some Mayavadi's Krishna. So don't think it's all the same. I'll read Gita Press and it's all the same. Not the same. Even their translation is faithful. They give a, but they don't understand the inner essence. So, because they're not devotees. And they're not pure devotees. Following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We're not saying that Gita Press people are bad people. Gita Press has, it's done a service to society by putting out these books. But having got Prabhupada's books, better we read them, because Gita Press can give a general idea. Or Gita Press or whatever. They can give a general idea, but the fully realized parampara understanding of Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami and all the acharyas who are in direct contact with Krishna by Shuddha Bhakti. We will get that from Prabhupada's books, and we won't get it from Mayavadi's books or other books. We won't get it from Amar Chitra Katha, and we probably won't get it from our grandmother either, because, you know, our grandmother may be pious, but she's not on the level of Prabhupada. So all this can give us a general idea or a general attraction, but to understand Krishna and enter into pure devotional service, we have to read Prabhupada's books and hear his lectures, which is why Prabhupada worked so hard to give these books. So please read them. Don't be lazy in this matter. You must read Prabhupada's books. If we're actually going to be followers of Prabhupada, then we have to read his books. Otherwise, what does it mean to be a follower of Prabhupada? Follower means we should understand what he's teaching. But how are we going to understand what he's teaching if we don't read his books? Srila Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, read my books. So if we want to know Prabhupada, and I hope we want to know Prabhupada, then we should read his books. And when we read, we'll find there's such wonderful. Again and again, we're reading and finding this is something just far beyond our mental speculation, our likes and dislikes on the mundane platform. This directly brings us to the spiritual world where Prabhupada is residing. And when Prabhupada is writing his books, he's simply, in the form of words, vani, presenting the whole spiritual world. And of course he analyzes the material world, how miserable it is, and how we should come out of that material attraction and take bath in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bathe in this ocean of the nectar of the mellows of pure devotion to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this, please?
Yeah. You mentioned about Krishna covered.
Do you have an extension mic or the cordless mic? Do you have that system? No? Okay, then don't speak to me. Look at the person furthest away from you. Aravindaksh Prabhu, for instance. Speak to him. Speak so that Aravindaksh Prabhu sitting at the back there can hear you. All right?
Hare Krishna, during the lecture, Maharaj...
Can you hear? You have to speak twice as loud.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj was mentioning in the class about Krishna being covered by his own yoga maya.
Can you hear? Can the ladies over there hear? All right, I'll repeat it. All right, speak to me and I'll repeat it afterwards.
Maharaj mentioned in the class about Krishna being covered by his own yoga maya.
Yeah.
Maharaj, can you elaborate in this?
Can I elaborate on how Krishna is covered by his own yoga maya? Yeah, it sounds impossible, doesn't it? How? Well, as I was saying, when I first saw this book, I was very attracted by that. When I first started to read it, I was like, one statement of Srila Prabhupada's just in the very beginning of the book just kind of knocked me over. And Prabhupada wrote that God means supreme. I'm paraphrasing here. God means supreme and all-powerful, but even higher and more powerful than God is devotion, bhakti, because by that he is controlled. And that just kind of knocked me over. I was amazed. What is this? More powerful than God is bhakti. So it's the same example of Gladstone. He is intrinsically more powerful than his grandson. There's no question about it. But he becomes subservient to his grandson out of love. So, to Krishna, even though he's the controller of billions of universes, love is more important than anything. Just like to Gladstone, more if we had to choose between giving up being the Prime Minister and giving up his family, well, nowadays, you know, people would probably give up their family. But it's more pleasing to him. It's actually, there's some pleasure about being the Prime Minister, but there's a lot of headache there also. But more pleasing is his family affairs. He gets more pleasure out of that. So Krishna has a whole energy which makes everything very pleasing for him in exchanging love. And love cannot be exchanged where there's awe and reverence. So Krishna has an energy by which he forgets he's God, and his devotees forget that he's God. But at the same time, he remembers that he's God. Because he's God, he forgets and he remembers at the same time. Did you understand that? No, we can't understand it. But, you know, he's Bhagavan and everything's possible for him. How he can be covered by his own yoga maya potency, it doesn't seem possible. But everything's possible, even the impossible, for him. Any other question? Yeah.
When we refer as mayavadis in our mentioning.
Well, I did touch on that, although it wasn't really the point of the class. Mayavadis.
Yeah. Do we refer to the philosophy what Acharya Shankara...
Do we refer to the philosophy that Shankaracharya spoke, or...?
But in Shankara's own thing, he says Bhaja Govindam. He says, chant the name of Govindam.
When Shankaracharya said Bhaja Govindam, he wasn't... That wasn't Mayavad. That's not Mayavad. When we say Mayavadis, we don't mean people who worship Krishna in pure devotion. Obviously. Isn't it? You look doubtful. Why should you be doubtful?
No, this is something relating to... When we say Mayavadi, we refer to what Shankara was saying. But at the same time...
Mayavadi means not only what Shankara was saying, the misleading philosophy that he spoke, but various derivatives of it that are current in the world today. What Shankara spoke, it's quite complex, but generally this idea that all is one, all the gods are one, ultimately we have to merge into oneness, the Supreme is impersonal, these are all derivatives. Actually, that impersonalism predates Shankaracharya, but in the modern world he gave form and impetus to that misleading understanding. Otherwise it's always there. It's always there in human society, this impersonalism. It's a manifestation of envy of Krishna. Or the Mayavad especially. Mayavad impersonalism. Yeah, anything else, please?
Maharaj, you mentioned about Gladstone's grandson taking liberties with him. But whether we, the same in relation to Krishna, of course we are not in that platform. But still we are his children. Sometimes we make a mistake in rendering service. It will be... forgiven by Lord, isn't it?
Well, it's quite a general question. The example of Gladstone's intimacy with his grandson. What is exactly the question?
I mean, Gladstone...
We are the children of God, so if we make a mistake in service, it will be forgiven by him. Yeah, but we shouldn't take it for granted. We shouldn't think that we can start worshipping Krishna in intimacy when we're still trying to enjoy this material world. That relationship between Gladstone and his grandson is a perverted reflection of the pure love for Krishna that exists in the spiritual world. But as long as we're not situated in that platform, then it's very dangerous for us to imagine that we are. Because then we'll mix the mundane rasa with this We'll take our mundane sentiments to be pure spiritual rasa. That cheating tendency is there. That's one of the four perverted propensities of the conditioned souls. So there's a tendency to cheat others and to cheat ourselves. Just like we may say, well, Sanatana Goswami, he was just offering dry roti to his Madan Gopal deity. So if we say, well, I'm just offering dry roti because out of love, but actually it's out of laziness. And we shouldn't do that. Rather, we should try to feed Krishna as Mother Yashoda feeds him. Why take this? Sanatana Goswami was an exceptional case. So like that, we may. That's why in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so many rules and regulations are given for our gradual uplift. So we should follow those and not try to artificially imitate in an immature stage the spontaneous devotional service of highly advanced devotees. I was speaking about that in the class. It's good you brought this point up. Because I was speaking about this in the class because we should know the greatness of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we should aspire to come to that platform. But at the same time, we should realize that we can't just artificially come to that level by imagining ourselves to be on it. And we have to go through all the regular procedures of bhakti to gradually become purified. Otherwise we just can't start like that, imitating Mother Yashoda, scolding Krishna. If we do that, we'll become offenders. So thank you for raising that point. Any other question? So what was your question about?
Maharaj, when we do Bhakti Mala, if it's long,
why don't we have two or four strands? I don't know exactly why. That's my answer. But as our acharyas have told us, we do so. There must be some reason. I don't know what it is. And I doubt if anyone in the whole of ISKCON knows either. And there may be hundreds of things like that. If you want, you can do some. We need a research institute too. Although this kind of thing is not very important actually to research. But there are many things which require researching. So we need some dedicated devotees to do that, who can give their lives to research various points. But I don't think any of you can do, because you're all... Well, if there's any young unmarried men who want to remain... Well, you can also marry and do it. You live very simply. Someone who has that inclination. Then we have to... So many questions arise. We have to research in different scriptures, meet people who are learned and ask questions. There are so many things to be researched. I'm looking for helpers so we can start a research institute and then make many books on these various topics. So if anyone wants to come, they can come. Hare Krishna.